When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
You're listening to Achtung Norwalk, broadcasting from the beautiful South Burnley. Accept no savagery.
Hello, dear listeners. Welcome to another edition of Neil and Nick's Millwall History Hour, dealing with the forthcoming fixtures for November. Joining me to mull over the past in our own inimitable style is my co-conspirator, Mr. Neil Fissler. Welcome to the show, Neil.
Hello, mate. How are you doing? Yep, we're going to take another trip down nostalgia's history lane, or nostalgia lane, whatever you want to call it.
We're gonna take the listeners away from the current negativity of Millwall and maybe look at some better times in the past when we did actually know how to play attacking football and players that got stuck in a little bit. So we have four fixtures for the month of November, Neil. So we're going to begin with Reading. Now, you've come up with one from 1966. Now, I thought we might make a change to start with your fixture, which was one from March 1966, Millwall 3, Reading 0. Good
choice. Yes, it was a result that helped us win promotion into the second division. And I know that we've covered this extensively in the past. Well, I know this season always pops up, but yeah, the goals were Tom Wilson after 30 minutes, Len Julian's on 48. Yep. Harry trips a penalty after 82, which is only his third goal for the club. Yeah.
Unusual. I don't remember Cripsy being a penalty taker, but I suppose I didn't start going till the early 70s when we had the likes of Derek Posse and Barry Bridges and more conventional, you know, goal-hungry strikers. And this result was actually an interesting one. Millwall 3, Reading 0, played in Division 3. It would have been played on the 5th of March, 1966. And I've actually got an edition of the Sunday People. So the next day, March the 6th. And they kind of draw attention to, they say the Lions are roaring, obviously, with the aftermath of a 3-0 win. This was their 10th game without defeats, building up for the end of season surge towards promotion, as it would be that season. But they mention their only weakness, which I think is a bit of a strong point, but the only weakness they say is they just got just one hot shot forward who was top scorer that season, which was Len Julian's, with 24 goals, which I think is a pretty good return for a team with only one weakness, a 24 goal striker.
Yeah, we wouldn't mind 24 goals in the whole team this season, would we?
We'd settle for Mickey Brown, who's second behind Len Julian's with 11 for the season from 34 appearances. It was a successful season. It was Benny Fenton's first in charge after departure of Billy Gray, Neil, of course.
Yeah, it was a strange old time. I think we've all gone into how Billy Gray
left,
and Benny took over. But we were on the climb. We were on the rise. We'd won promotion from Division 4, settled into Division 3, and won promotion straight away into Division Two. So it was one of those funny periods. We always have these periods in Millwall history, don't we, where we look to be getting something right.
We have a surge, don't we? We have, and funny enough, the choice that I'll come on to was in a similar kind of time. It was just the pre-promotion season, but we do get these surge periods where we it's all kind of guns blazing. This was such a time. The win over Reading was played out in front of 16,000 at Coldblow Lane, 16,832. It left us in top position, according to Mill history. We'd finished second in the table that season behind Hull City, Neil, who were champions. But it was, you did get a sense that this was a team building something, the mythical, proverbial, the much sought after, the holy grail of promotion to the top flight. And this is where Benny Fenton was set upon, wasn't he? Which would come heartbreakingly close in 71-72.
Yeah, Benny Fenton, he added players, didn't he? Brought in the likes of Posse and...
Yeah.
And it was a slowly, slowly catchy monkey type of situation, wasn't it? Where we didn't go all out for promotion, but he gradually built it. He picked players up from elsewhere and he very slowly put this team together that could probably rival quite a lot of our best teams in Millwall history, I think.
I would say so. It's among. I mean, also the other thing that was interesting with Benny is Benny Fenton. I'm talking like I know him. I was privileged to sit looking at him, not talk to him, as a kid. But he was a man of. I mean, he became known as a defensively minded manager, which sounds familiar in the current context. But the players that he brought in were often quite attacking minded. I mean, this piece that the report of the 3-0 win. Dunphy makes the Lions roar is the main headline. It mentions the newly signed Eamon Dunphy from York and another guy, Alan Willey, who was pre my time. I don't know him, but it mentions little Eamon Dunphy working tremendously hard as a Mill link man, as a goal creator. Benny Fenton knew his attacking players as much as he knew his defence, didn't he?
Yeah, he doesn't get enough credit. You speak to players from that era and we've spoken to them and none of them will have a bad word to say about Benny Fenton. He ought to be probably remembered as one of the great Millwall managers.
I believe so, yeah. I mean, maybe it helps because the when I started going in the early 70s, it was just on the cusp of the back end of an almost memorable season, and Benny Fenton was the mastermind of that. So you kind of remember him from successful days, I suppose. But I think you're right, because he was actually sacked in the end before the arrival of Gordon Jago. And, you know, we weren't doing as badly as maybe the sacking justified. I don't know. I mean, it's a long while ago now. But, no, I do think he's underrated as a manager. He always had an air of authority about him when he walked past the... the orange seats in the forecourt where I used to sit often. I'd pay me extra 10p and get in there to sit down. I thought it was great luxury. A player that you mentioned that's playing for Reading in this fixture, 3-0 win for the Lions, as we've said, listeners, but playing for the opposition was Pat Terry, an ex-Lion himself, Neil, Pat Terry.
Yeah, grew up supporting Millwall. Yeah. Started in the first division with Charlton. And would excel as a he was a lower division goal scorer. I think he was Gillingham's leading scorer a couple of seasons in a row, and then became Ron Gray, signed in for Millwall, and he was the last piece of our promotion push.
Absolutely, I mean, I am listeners will need to know that I am greatly assisted by a wonderful book called Millwall Who's Who by a certain author who shall be nameless. It enables you, if you ever want to do a history podcast about me, it enables you for it to sound instantly expert. So I've got Pat Terry's entry in the aforesaid book, Neil, Mill Who's Who, available via victorpublishing.co.uk, listeners. And I recommend that you do snap it up because, as we said in the previous show, it is a bit of a masterwork, in my opinion. But I found a quote from Wikipedia, which I just loved about Pat, Neil. This is Patrick Alfred Terry, born in 1933, passed away in 2007. He was described as a player, quote, whose game was built on the understanding that no quarter was asked nor given, as he let nothing stand in his way in pursuit of a goal. What a quote. What a hard... And the photo that you've got in Who's Who shows a hard-looking man. Hint of kindness in his face, but he looked like a hard man that took no prisoners on the pitch.
Yeah, formed a formidable partnership with Peter Burridge, another great player of that era. Yeah. And a guy I was very lucky to get to know towards the end of his life was a guy called David Jones.
Right, another name from that era, yeah.
Yeah, and yeah, those three, what we would do to have one of those three, let alone all of them bloody three in...
Absolutely.
These days, became a London cabbie.
Yep.
And little known, but his nephew actually had a spell at the club in the very early 90s.
So it'd been Peter Terry. Peter Terry, I guess. Yeah. I don't remember that name, but bow to the Who's Who book, Mill Who's Who listeners. It's a wonderful piece of a reference work. A much-travelled player, Pat Terry, Neil, as well. Just looking at, you know, Charlton, Newport County, Swansea, Gillingham, Millwall, Northampton, Reading, Swindon, and then into the non-league with Hillingdon and Folkestone, Greenwich Borough and so on. Different era of football, and a different era of footballer, because I still can't get past this wonderful quote about no quarter being given in pursuit of a goal. That's wonderful stuff. I'd love that as an epitaph.
Yeah, that's real wall, that is, isn't it? That's all.
Absolutely, absolutely. Millwall 3, Reading 0, and this would be part of a promotion-winning surge that would see us finish second to Hull City and be promoted from Division 3 into Division 2, where we would spend certainly the remainder of the 60s and the first few years of my own Mill supporting career in the very early 70s under the management of Benny Fenton. Good choice. Nice choice, Neil. Thank you for that. I'm going to raise you your 3-0 win over Reading, and I'm going to go for a 5-0 win over Reading, played on the 16th of November 1999 in Division 2, or the Division 3, as in old money, shall we call it, in front of just 5,202. This was part of the building process, I think, Neil, wasn't it? Under Rhino and Macca, I think, still at this stage, 1999, I believe. I don't think McGee had taken over as yet. A 5-0 win in the third tier. A Paul Moody hat-trick, listeners, Paul Moody hat-trick, and a two-goal brace for Neil Harris. We've just been talking about strikers we give our right arm for, Neil. Give me Paul Moody and Neil Harris in their pomp.
Yeah, that would be a dream, wouldn't it?
Wonderful dream. Absolutely.
I do remember this game.
Yeah, I was there for this one. I remember this one myself, yeah.
It was a strange time because I think Harris was just about to reach prime, wasn't he, for us? Funnily enough, I spoke to Paul Moody about this game and he couldn't remember anything about it.
He didn't remember his hat trick?
No.
Wow.
Didn't remember scoring a hat trick.
I used to love Paul Moody. And again, he was an underrated striker because he was a big man. And there's any dispute about, his physique carried. I never saw Pat Terry, but that description of him could as much be applied really to Paul Moody in terms of being the big target man up front. But he was also, as so many big men are often, Neil, they're quite light on his feet. And he was not bad with the ball at his feet as well. And I think he wasn't ever really given much credit for that aspect of his game.
No, him and Harris was the
dream.
Pretty much the reason why we got promoted, weren't we?
Absolutely.
They were the archetypal big man, little man.
Yeah, and Harris in his pomp.
Yeah, and Harris, yeah, we've got to say, at the time, he's probably the best striker I've seen play for the club.
It's an interesting question. I mean, I think you're probably right in terms of goal return.
He was absolutely deadly, wasn't he? And almost certainly, if it hadn't have been for the testicular cancer.
Yeah, we probably would have left us, I think.
He wouldn't. I think we'd have struggled to have kept hold of him, that promotion winning summer.
Yeah. Well, that was on the back end of, did he get 30 goals that season, or was it just one short? I can't remember.
Yeah, he won the Golden Boot, didn't he? Didn't he take a penalty in the last...
That's right. He nicked it off of Paul Mooney. He took his hat-trick away from him there as well, I think, didn't he?
Yeah, that's right. And I think it was in pursuit of the Golden Boot. But look at that team from that day. It was Denzel in goal.
Yeah.
Arguably a fine goalkeeper.
Goalkeeper. One of our best, I think. Yeah.
Yeah. Hit and miss Ricky Newman. Robbie Ryan was a steady professional footballer.
Yeah.
Tim Cahill. All-time great of the club, no matter what era.
Yep.
Got to say Cahill. Nethercott, no-nonsense defender with Scott Fitzgerald, another no-nonsense defender.
Yeah.
And then you got Paul Ifill and great servant.
And a brilliant unpredictability to him that I loved. You know, there are some players that you look forward to seeing get the ball, Neil, and Paul Ifill was always a player that you sat forward when he got the ball at his feet. You never quite knew what was going to come. And I loved Paul Ifill as a Millwall player. I think he was just brilliant. Michael Gilkes, who I've picked out just basically as much as I think one of the joys and beauties of these shows, I hope you agree, listeners, is that it lets you mention the greats and the obvious kind of moments and the big names, but it also gives you a chance, Neil, just to look at some of the less well-known players. I don't know if you'd agree with it. I just really take great pleasure in picking out players that didn't pull up any trees, but they did do their little bit in their way. He contributed, you know, Michael Gilkes.
Michael Gilkes was a very, very good winger with Reading.
Yeah.
I seem to remember.
Well, this was the thing with this team, because there was a blend of youth. Obviously, you know, we're looking at Mark Bertram in midfield, Tim Cahill and Neil Harris, really, had all been, you know, coming through from the youth ranks and signed as youngsters, and Paul Ifill, the same. But then you had...
Leka Dintsey came off the bench in this game. And
that's right.
Yeah, well, he must have been about six at the time.
He was always on the fringes, wasn't he? Leka Dintsey. But I think that it was the blend of experience. You know, you're right. Michael Gilkes had been around the block a few times. Barbadian international. He played in the lower kind of levels, but knew enough. Same really with Paul Moody. I think was it Southampton and Oxford? He'd made his name when Oxford were a team.
Fulham.
And it was a wonderful blend of youth and experience, the magic blend, really. It would come good the following season under my Mark McGee's management, which was harsh on Rhino and Macca. But then there was an unusual streak of ruthlessness in that decision, wasn't there, to out them in favour of Mark McGee, which worked out well in the end.
Yeah, I think I'll never forget that game at Brentford, which was their last game in charge. And
yeah,
just the venom that was directed towards Rhino.
Sad day. I don't know. I don't always buy this Millwall family business. I know it's there, but sometimes you wonder where it goes at times, you know, because these were great servants, both for the club, and there was a blip in form, I suppose. I mean, the promotion surge in the following season kind of coughed and spluttered slightly, and there was venom. I mean, it was a nasty day out, really, as we look back.
Yeah, and Paul Shaw was a sub in this game. Another fantastic servant for the club, and...
Yeah, had his own song, didn't he? The Paul Shaw song, Baldy Shaw. Got no hair.
And he don't care.
One thing I do, just to give it, I mean, raise our spirits a little bit after that little downbeat bit for about Rhino and Macca, but the manager of Reading this day after a 5-0 spanking was Alan Pardew. and he admitted in the post-match conference, Neil, that Reading were in for a relegation fight. That's always good to see, isn't it? And that's courtesy of the Reading Evening Post those wonderful post-match quotes. So, yeah, there we are. Millwall 5, Reading 0. Surge towards promotion the following season. And big shout out to Michael Gilkes, 28 appearances for the Lions, 6 as a sub, 2 goals, 1999-2001.
Achtung, Millwall.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
We move along, Neil. Now you've gone back. You've rewound the like the old the time machine, H.G. Wells, where it goes backwards or forwards, and you see the date swirling around. We've gone backwards to 1903, to the 21st of March. Millwall, unfortunately, Millwall Athletic, getting beat in the FA Cup semi-final in 1903.
Yeah, our first of three appearances, isn't it?
Yeah, that's right.
We were a Southern League team, obviously, back then. This was well before, I think it would be another 18 years before we got into the league, 17, 18 years, wouldn't it?
Yeah, Southern League side, playing on the Isle of Dogs. I think this would have been the North Greenwich, the what is now Millwall Park, near to Mudchute Station in modern terms. We'd have been playing there. But this was a semi-final, and that is remiss of me. If I'm going to set myself up as a podcaster, listener, I should have done some notes. And this is one that I didn't make any notes on. So you'll have to tell me where the game was played, Neil.
It was played at Villa Park. Mm-hmm. And we had seen off Bristol Rovers after a replay in the intermediate round.
Intermediate round.
Yeah, well, this was after the qualifying rounds. And then we had an intermediate round. Right. Then we beat Luton Town 3-0.
And this would be the FA Cup proper, as they would have called it, the full tournament. Yeah.
Yep. Then we beat Preston North End 4-1.
That was no mean feat.
They were a top team then. And then we beat Everton 1-0.
That's right. I've seen pictures. There are pictures of the Everton game. Played at the, because you can see the railway arches in the back, and I've seen photos online of a moment's incident in the game, and that was played at North Greenwich. That would have been a huge game. That would have been a huge crowd that would have turned out for that on the island.
Yeah, that was the first ever meeting.
Yeah.
We haven't played them too often. We've only played them about 10, 11 times.
Yeah, we actually have quite a decent record at home versus Everton. Not so much if we travel to Goodison, but we actually do tend to have a fighting chance at home against them, don't we? Historically.
Yeah, there were 14,000 in the ground that day. when we beat Everton.
That would have been quite something.
Yeah, well, I don't know what the ground was like, but it must have been shoulder to shoulder.
Yeah, absolutely.
And Fred Watkins scored our only goal. Well, scored the only goal of the game.
Now, I'm going to speak completely from memory, because as I say, listeners, much to my disgrace, I didn't do any notes on this particular game that Neil sent me. But if memory serves, did Derby then face Bury in the 1903 Cup final, Neil?
Yes, they did, and they lost by a record score, 6-0.
6-0, yeah. See, I'm not losing it, listeners. That was, when you say these things, you hope your facts are correct, but that's a record. I think it remains a record, actually, to this day, doesn't it? That's like a Cup final score.
Yeah, I think the only thing that might have got close, Manchester City a couple of years ago,
didn't they have a big win? It's terrible you lose track of FA Cup finals. I know more about the 1903 Cup final than the 2013 or 23 or whatever.
Well, in goal for us that game was a guy called John Sutcliffe,
right?
Who I think we might have done one of our history specials on a couple of years ago now.
Okay.
And only one of three men to play for England at both rugby union and football.
You mentioned a chap, and I can't remember if that was Sutcliffe now that you say that, but I do remember you mentioning that feat, because that is quite something, isn't it? Playing both codes for England. I mean, you know, not cricket, but rugby and football is an unusual achievement.
Yeah, considering that obviously he'd had to have turned professional to play football at that time.
I've just found him in the book, John William Sutcliffe. Goalkeeper, 1902 to 1903, 57 games, born in Shibden, 1868, died in Bradford, 1947. And as you say, he was one of only three men to play for England at both rugby union and football, which is quite an achievement. And he played in our semi-final game against Derby, who would actually go on to be beaten badly by Bury, who won the FA Cup that year, of course. But there we are. That's a good choice. I like that one, Neil.
Yeah, well, a lot of games are boring, aren't they? So well, let's go back to 1903 when we got 3-0 by Derby in a FA Cup semi-final.
Some games, it's funny, actually, when you do this. I mean, I didn't struggle so much with Derby. I'm going to mention my choice in a moment, listeners, but some clubs, we just don't seem to have much to talk about. I mean, you have to kind of really dig deep to get some. I found Bournemouth a difficult one. There aren't that many dramatic moments or big games, apart from maybe one obvious in the promotion winning season when Bournemouth have featured, you know. But other clubs seem to generate heat and fire, and others don't they?
Yeah, although Bournemouth, I come up with an interesting one on.
We'll save that up for later. I'm gonna an obvious choice, perhaps, listeners, but I'll make no apologies about it because I was there for this one. A beautiful, sunny 3rd of September 1988. 13,000 of us packed into Colnbrow Lane. I can remember aspects of the journey. The traffic was a monster. I was coming up from Orpington up through Deptford. This was our first home game, having been promoted in Division 1. And we're playing Derby County, and it finished 1-0. And the mania, when the goal went in around me, in the lower part of the halfway line, I can still feel it now as I'm talking to you. There are moments from this whole season, Neil, like that, especially the opening phase of the season when, I don't know how you remember it, but it felt like every game had a touch of the big cup tie about it. It was just manic in Colnbrow.
Yeah, we finally got up there, hadn't we? After all those years of trying,
yeah,
we were in the top flight. We were rubbing shoulders with the big boys.
I think the thing was, you never quite know how it's going to go. You know, I mean, there are some teams. I mean, we're seeing Norwich this season. I know the times are different, but they've got themselves into the Premier League, and they're getting pounded week in and week out. And it's how big a cricket score will they report at the end of Saturday or whenever they play their games. And I didn't want that for the Millwall. I think I probably expected us to find it hard because we're in the top flight, but I didn't want us to be cannon fodder. That just wouldn't have felt right. And lo and behold, we weren't cannon fodder, far from it. And I think this was the moment where it dawned on me that actually at the Den, we could go toe-to-toe. We'd follow it up with a win, famous win for me over Everton. Mentioned that club again. a couple of weeks later, 2-1 win. And again, that was another moment. The first big club, as it seemed to me, that we're playing. But Derby County were no slouches. No, they had Shilton in goal, Peter Shilton. I've just got a report here, and I think they had Mark Wright playing, England player, in their defence. And, you know, they were a decent side, and we beat them. And it felt like a load was lifted from the shoulders slightly. I don't know if that's overdoing it.
Yeah, they were all backed by Jizang Maxwell's old man, weren't they? He had a nefarious character in
Did you ever meet him, Neil? I mean, you've done the rounds journalism, right? Did you ever get to meet the monster?
Mate, he wouldn't. Yeah, well, he wouldn't have mixed with the likes of me. About the nearest I've came to somebody like that was I was shifting on the Today newspaper many years ago.
Yeah, I remember it.
And I was rushing to go out somewhere, but the sports desk was next to the canteen. And I pushed in front of Alistair Campbell, who was then the editor.
Oh, blimey. You do go back, don't you? Derby County were wearing the name Maxwell, which is an embarrassment given the current court cases that are afoot in the under the US jurisdictions, but there we are, Maxwell.
And the fact the old man was one of the biggest thieves in newspaper history.
I mean, this is an aside, listeners, and I'll let you into my little private world. I'm fascinated by Robert Maxwell. I've read a few things about him, listened to an audio book recently on him. I find him endlessly fascinating. And now, obviously, the denouement of Ghislaine in court in America. But we digress from the football. fascinating.
Yeah, but only could a Millwall podcast go that far off of...
down a dark road.
Andrew, Ghislaine Maxwell and everything else going on.
But I think that's...
anywhere else, do you?
That is a podcast in its own right. But as a story, it's just... I mean, I think it probably helps that you remember the likes of Derby coming to the Den with Maxwell, and he tried to make himself into a big figure in English football, and to some extent he achieved it, first with Oxford and then with Derby. So I think it just helped.
Brain scheme where he wanted a merge.
Oxford merge Reading, didn't he? And Oxford, yeah.
The Thames Valley Royals, wasn't it?
Wonderful stuff.
Time in English football where there are all kinds of silly schemes going around. Weren't Brentford and QPR going to merge at one stage or something like that?
Well, it was a very fluid time. We'd had the kind of disasters of 1985, the fire, the Brentford fire, and Liverpool disgracing the country in the European Cup final in Brussels and at Heysel. We had yet to reach the Hillsborough disaster, which would be at the end of this season, strangely.
Yeah, but it wasn't their fault, though, Hyde.
It wasn't their fault. we're veering on this show everywhere now, listeners. We're going into it all. we'll have Epstein on here soon. Oh, he's dead, so we can't do that. I'm not talking about the Beatles there. Manager either.
He's dead as well. There.
A 1-0 win for the Lions, a Teddy Sheringham tap home from close after a knockdown. 44 minutes, I remember it like it was yesterday in the hair stand and my neck when I think of it. Part of, obviously, the classic duo of Teddy Sheringham and Tony Cascarino. 160 career goals for Millwall for both players. I think our most dangerous and highest level partnership we've ever had, obviously playing in Division One, but they were the part, weren't they? I just thought that as a twosome up front, that you don't get better than that in Mill terms.
Yeah, no, the hairs on the back of my neck are standing up, and it's not because I've just been possessed by Jeffrey Epstein either. it's very, very, very special times, weren't they? And you
had
to be there.
Yeah, no, you did. And it might be quite boring for younger listeners. I don't know how many younger listeners we have on these shows, but it might be boring. But we're playing to the gallery. We're playing to our
boomers.
The boomers. Peter Shilton in goal, great servant. He took an absolute flagellation of abuse in front of the Colblow Lane end this day, as is the Millwall way. Mark Wright was a very decent defender. I think he played in the 86 World Cup. in Mexico.
Played for Oxford, yeah.
And I believe Paul Goddard playing for Derby, who would come back to haunt us, talking about ghosts. I won't put him in the same sentence as Epstein. He would come back to haunt us, wouldn't he, with that £1 million signing a couple of years later. As the Daily Sunday Mirror put it, terrific time for Millwall's Teddy Boy. The man they called Sherry doubled bar takings down the Old Kent Road last night as Millwall celebrated their first ever victory in Division One, says Roy Daly of the Sunday Mirror, dated September the 4th. Wonderful, wonderful times. Neil, we need to move along. We're going to move along.
Coincidentally, Roy Daly, I used to share a desk with on the Today newspaper.
No, you do. So you do know the celebs. You're just making out. You don't. We're going to move along to Middlesbrough next in our games. I'm breaking the rules for this one. You've gone for I think you've gone for a home game as well, Neil. Haven't you? Middlesbrough won Middlesbrough 1971.
Yeah, 30th of January. I don't do these home and away. I can never be bothered.
I wrestled with, well, should I break the rules? And I decided, yes, I will break the rules for this one. Neil don't even think about the rules. That's the difference.
No, there aren't any rules, are there? Yeah, funnily enough, I thought about the rules when we first started doing these and thought, no.
These are the issues that I wrestle with, and Neil don't even think about them, listeners. Neil's choice, 30th of Jan, 1971. That will be Middlesbrough. That'll be Mill 1, Middlesbrough 0. Goal scored by the great, my hero, one of the biggest figures in Mill life when I first started going, Barry Kitchener. What a player. What a name.
Yep. When you talk about player interviews and things like that, you just... One player that I wish was still around have done a podcast with would have been Kitch.
I agree.
I would absolutely have loved just to have got his thoughts on it. And
the stories he could tell.
Yeah, I'd spoken to him on the phone.
Have you? Right.
He needed help and things like that. And he was just so readily available to people. And just to talk about that season. That 70-71 season.
Yeah.
The match report says, although the mud was against classic football.
Middlesbrough versus Millwall, classic football.
Poor Middlesbrough finishing kept us in the game. But Steve Brown, who's a player I want to talk about, sparked a revival.
Yeah.
And he took the corner, we won a corner, he went to take it. Cripps and Kitch came up. Christ almighty, you wouldn't have got much change from them, would you?
Harry Cripps and Barry Kitch. No, you wouldn't have done.
Underrated footballer. You speak to anybody.
Yeah.
And you speak to the likes of Brian King, George Jacks, and anybody from that era.
Yeah.
And Kitch could play football.
Yeah, I agree.
Kitch was a lovely, lovely footballer. And I don't think he gets the credit in that sense. He gets the credit because he's probably the greatest player this club's ever had. And that's some statement. And
yes, it is.
I don't think there'd be many people of our vintage that would disagree with that.
No, he dominated the defence. He was Millwall and... You know, it's quite something.
He embodied Millwall, didn't he?
He embodied Millwall, that's right. He
encapsulated everything that Millwall stands for. You don't have to be the greatest footballer in the world, but just bloody try and you'll get worshipped for life. And it very much, he was worshipped for life.
He was rather like Cripps, Neil. I don't know if you'd agree with this, but both Barry Kitchener and Harry Cripps had this kind of bustling, the big reputation, but they weren't dirty players. They were good players. Barry Kitchener, I think, was probably better than Cripps in terms of technical ability. He was a good player. Probably should have played at a higher level, in truth. But they, obviously, they were part of Millwall, and there's this kind of, every report you read of that time, we've had any success, speaks of the Old Kent Road and the whole... you know, they'll be raising their glasses in the pub down the Old Kent Road, or all this kind of, and he was of that kind of image of the club. But I do think he was a better player than he was given credit for.
Yeah, absolutely. And apparently they came up for this corner. Wingham, the Middlesbrough goalkeeper, was under pressure from Cripps and Kitch headed in. Only goal of the game.
And he could head a ball. He could, when he got hold of a header, he was it was a magnificent sight, listeners. Barry Raymond Kitchener, centre-half, 1966-1982, 602 games, listeners. 28 goals for Millwall. He also played in America. He went to the US, didn't he? He was playing in the NASL for a short time.
Yeah, didn't he go under Jago and...
The Tampa Bay Rowdies. He went to the Tampa Bay Rowdies, which again is that's right. And I think that's quite, you know, for this kind of player that's got this old Kent Road stamp all over him, you know, to take off to the exotic world of the NASL was quite something to do. So no, he's my hero. I think, you know, if I sit and think who's my favourite all time player, because I was slightly too young to really appreciate Cripps, though I could tell that he was loved. For me, Barry Kitchener was my Mill hero and remains so, because that's how football works. When you use the heroes of your childhood, remain so through your life, really. Great player, great choice. That was from 1971. My choice, strangely, is played at home, because I have rules, listeners, and I've broken those rules. Millwall nil, Middlesbrough one. I'm breaking the rules for a reason, which is my own personal moral framework. I'm breaking it because it's a game that sticks in my memory. This was played on the 27th of October, nil, 1973 in Division 2. And it was played... it was a 1-0 win for Middlesbrough. I remember the game very well. Strange. I was sat in the... I paid an extra 10 pence to sit in the forecourt seat.
See, you were posh back then, weren't you, as well?
That's right. It really makes me laugh when people say I'm posh. But anyway, the first and only... one of the very few times I have seen it with Brian Clough, but it was the first time, and I can't think of many other occasions, where the opposition manager was applauded as he walked around the edge of the pitch to take his place in the dugout. And that manager was Jack Charlton for Middlesbrough. And he got applause as he walked around. This was pre-game, before the game had actually happened. It's one of the things that, you know, it's a rare honour at the Den. You don't see it very often, Neil Dear. Brian Clough is the only other person I can think of that got that.
Yeah, we don't even normally applaud our own manager coming back, do we?
No, not everyone, even heroes of the game don't seem to get it down there. But Jack Charlton got that ripple of applause as he walked around. It stuck in my mind. It still sticks in my mind to this day. And the incidents of the game stick in my mind, because I do remember the goal going in just prior to half-time. I'm just looking at the match report here. Will Foggan, I think, from Middlesbrough.
Alan Foggan,
excuse me. And he bundled the ball home. A player called Smith from a Foggan pass. I'm just reading
the match. Yeah, Smith, yeah.
Yeah, got the ball in the net. And then Mill basically bombarded the Middlesbrough goal in the second half. I'm just reading a match report here from the Sunday People. And they say it won't come much tougher for Middlesbrough than at Millwall. The Lions poured in everything in the second half, but the biggest back four that this journalist had ever seen, Pat Collins, beat them off. And Gordon Hill, wonderful, wonderful striker, winger come striker for the Lions, hit a tremendous 20-yard shot that smashed against the bar. And I remember it coming down, and a huge kerfuffle because the controversy as to whether it crossed the line. The referee didn't give it. And I'll let you work out what the reaction of the Den was when that wasn't given, because they were adamant that it had crossed the line, no matter.
That was a word that nobody uses these days, kerfuffle.
One has to expand one's vocabulary, Mr. Fisler. I've picked out two names from the team sheets. A young Graham Souness played for Middlesbrough that day.
He did indeed. He was one that caught my eye. David Mills was another, who was a
yes
record transfer.
And Jim Platt in goal for Middlesbrough. I think it was Jim Platt, if I remember rightly. Yes.
Yeah, no, it was Jim Platt. And David Armstrong, another player who seemed to have that comb over when he was about 18, didn't he?
I suppose now the modern buzz cut has dealt with the comb over, but there are many, many players of this era. I remember Ralph Coates of Burnley and Bobby Charlton.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you're right. I think Mills had a comb over as well. Whether he had a comb over in this game, whether he'd lost it, well, he certainly lost it later. I think, did he finish up at Southampton? Armstrong.
David Armstrong. Yeah, he did. Southampton, Bournemouth, that kind of way. I think he played with George Lawrence a little bit later on when Chicken George was down on the south coast.
And Souness, of course, would go on to play for Spurs, Glasgow Rangers, and Sampdoria, I think, in Italy.
And Liverpool.
Oh, yeah, don't mustn't forget Liverpool and a couple of European Cups mixed in the mix.
The councillors for that. Funnily enough, I'm going to tell you a very quick story about Graham Souness. Was the cousin of a next-door neighbour when I was a kid.
Okay. You do move with the stars.
I don't. Yeah, but I've never met him. But just funnily enough, my mum happened to mention it the other day when she'd just seen him on TV and
remember him. Yeah,
like they go off on a tangent. They got on a tangent worse than we do. But
being serious, a tough, hard, and very, very skillful player, Graham Souness, a kind of player any team would want in their side. And I just, you know, it's interesting. I mean, I'd forgotten I'd seen him as a youngster. I didn't really take much notice of him, but there it is. He's in the Middlesbrough side. I've picked out Gordon Hill, if I may, Neil, just to give Gordon. We haven't really mentioned Gordon Hill that often, I don't think, in our shows. Mercurial talent, Merlin, as I've actually picked out the wording from the Who's Who book that you can buy from Amazon or from victorpublishing.co.uk. And I recommend that you do. But Gordon Alec Hill was a wonderful talent who joined us in the early 70s, left us and broke my heart in 1976. He would go to Manchester United and go on to great things, actually, United. He won an FA Cup and an England cap, I think, of United, didn't he?
Gordon. Yeah, he was a fantastic player, wasn't he?
Wonderful.
He was on the wing.
Fast. I think also when you're young, I mean, if the players that you're seeing, your heroes are not much older than you, it somehow counts, doesn't it? And I remember, well, every time Gordon Hill got the ball on the wing, a bit like I've said about Paul Eiffel, something was going to happen. And he was a real, real talent. Signed by Benny Fenton, I think. And, Benny, defensive Benny, but a man that could pick a forward player.
Yeah, and you look at this game. We had Brian Clark.
We did. Yeah, good player.
Scored the first goal on the Sunday. Lovely guy.
Yeah.
Alf Wood, who died to
passed away.
Oh, yeah.
Great striker. A rugged, hard Millwall striker. Great player.
And Dumphy and Bolland. Gordon Bolland. That's a player we don't mention, isn't it?
No, we don't. I'll have to make a note for our next show to pick out Gordon Bolland specifically, because you're right. And one of the things, as I said already, with in this show with Michael Jilks, is that he gives you a chance just to, however in passing, just to mention players that have really contributed. And Gordon Bolland did. He was a striker for many, many years. Scored a lot of goals for us. And maybe we'll pick him out specifically in the next
brilliant
show.
Brilliant hairstyle.
It grew into that. His early years were quite conventional, but he went down a kind of Brian May route in the end, didn't he, for Queen? You know, only tighter. It's like a tighter kind of
a Millwall frizz. On this day, shares quite a famous name.
Who that was? Have a look.
Eddie Jones.
Eddie Jones. Yes,
not Jones that I know. That
Dave Donaldson on the other side. That's right, Eddie Jones. I'd forgotten that.
Became a fireman, came from Tottenham. I believe he was one of those plethora of players that we used to procure from White Hart Lane every now and again, didn't we? I think Benny had contacts up there.
He must have done. I do remember, it must have been prior to this game, there was a big moment I remember reading the programme describing it as a wind of change. Harry Cripps and Brian Brown were dropped in favour of Dave Donaldson and Eddie Jones. And this was deemed to be like a big moment. A wind of change had blown along Cold Blow Lane. I always remember that sentence. I remember reading it, thinking it quite poetic for the Millwall programme. But two good players, both Donaldson and Eddie Jones, were two decent right and left backs.
Yeah, but that would have been Gordon Borland. Probably
Gordon Borland, that's right.
Probably have written the programme back then. His brother played for Southend.
Achtung, Millwall. But we must move along, Neil. We're going to go on to the Bournemouth game now. Now, you've picked out one from 1938, and I don't remember the 1938 season at all. So this is a Millwall 4, Bournemouth nil, or Bournemouth and Boscombe Athletic, to give it their full and proper title at that time. 1938 in April.
Yeah, game over Easter. We'd beaten them 3-0 2 days before.
Yep.
And then we came back to Cold Blow Lane. It must have been Easter Monday, because I think back then you played a team on Easter Saturday, then you played the reverse fixture, didn't you, on the holiday Monday. And so we put 7 goals past them in 2 days, kept 2 clean sheets.
Yep.
And ironically, because of World War II, it'd be another 10 years before we played them. And we beat them 4-0 that day as well. But this was a team that was building. It was...
Yeah, I agree.
We'd reached an FA Cup semi-final the year before. And this win, Jimmy Richardson scored 1, John McLeod got 2, and Foster Headley.
That's a great name. I want to be called Foster Headley. Foster Hart. Maybe I could call myself that and change my name. Everyone's got to call me Foster Headley Hart now. And we'd win the league. We'd win the league. Top of the third division, Neil.
Yeah, it's a step closer to promotion. I think we had 2 games left.
Yeah.
One against Brighton and one team from Devon who I refuse to say their name. Because they're up the top of the expressway and I've cancelled them. If anybody wants a clue, you could actually say that they're excrement.
I've never known that there was Devonian hatreds like this.
Absolutely fucking don't want anybody from that city.
Michael Jackson, didn't he get involved with them? And Yuri Geller.
Yeah, that tiny little outfit. I don't even want them to win a game of Tiddlywinks.
We won't even say their name. Although I've been there, it's quite a nice place. Let's move along.
Oh, God. Anyway, but so we were building something.
Yeah, we were.
And this was, I think we finished midway in the second division the following season.
We did.
But then...
Mr. Hitler decided to invade.
Austrian decided that he wanted world domination.
Yeah, and it got in the way, didn't it? I mean,
and stopped us in our tracks. And this was a lovely squad. And you speak to historians, and I think if you probably read Jim Murray's Lions of the South, this was a team that were and a squad that was building something. Millwall had a bit of ambition.
We did. I think we'd redeveloped the ground. The side stand was built for first division football. It was all built for the big push towards the ultimate aim of winning promotion to the top flight.
And, Cheerful Charlie was in charge.
Cheerful Charlie Hewitt. And we would finish, we'd win the league in this particular season, as Neil says, champions of the third division. We would be promoted to the second flight, finish mid-table, ready for that push in the 1939-40 season, and a couple of games in, and it all kicks off on the Polish border, and the next thing you know, we've got world conflict. I've picked out a much more mundane fixture, Neil, for my AFC Bournemouth choice, and I just find this, I find these kinds of Mickey Mouse little competitions fascinating. I don't know why, but this was an AMS, an Associate Members Cup game, played in 1984 on the 13th of March at the Den. It finished Millwall 2, AFC Bournemouth 2. We then lost 7-6 on a penalty shootout. But this is one for the quizzers out there. what game did Mill still progress in despite losing the knockout cup tie? And that game will be this one. Because they had a rule, such as the Mickey Mouse nature of this competition, they had progress for the highest scoring losers, which is something out of, I don't know, you get it on Catchphrase or, you know, you one get of these TV quiz shows.
Football. Yeah, you get it in kids' football when they kids want to football. Give a trophy to somebody, don't they? So as long as you lose, but you score 15 goals when you're losing by 50 goals to 15, they what give a you a trophy on. For it, don't they?
So Mill 2, Bournemouth 2, we lose the game 7-6 on the shootout, but we still went through as a high-scoring loser into the next round of the Associate Members' Cup. That would then...
Were we banned from Bournemouth that season, right at the end, for the final?
Yeah, I think there'd been some you know, argy-bargy down there previously. I think fans were banned from it. Well, we were banned. It was in that very tough early 80s period when, you know...
And they haven't quite forgiven us for one of the activities, have they?
We'd had the ground closed in 78, and I think, didn't the chairman threaten to close us down in 82? Like, actually fold the club, literally.
Oh, that was Alan Thorne, wasn't it? Yeah, I think...
You're right. We'd later have an FA-imposed sanction where we couldn't sell any away tickets. All sorts of stuff. It was a very you know, fractious time. But this is wonderful stuff to lose a game and yet still go through as a high scoring loser, which we did in the AMS Cup. It was now as mutated. I mean, the reason I picked it out is as much for that oddity, but also for the fact that it's such a Mickey Mouse competition now, it still lives on. I mean, it's now the EFL trophy, Papa John's trophy. You know, if going through as the high scoring loser is not undignified, surely playing in the Papa John's trophy must be equally as undignified as the modern clubs, you know. And it's still here. It's incredible.
Yeah, it's one of those trophies. It lingers around like a bad smell, doesn't it? Nobody wants it. Nobody goes to it.
No.
Except for the final. We must be about the only club that's ever got to the final and lost money. Despite selling 60,000 tickets or whatever.
It lives on. It's like the undead. It's like, you know, you can't, the man they couldn't hang. It's still here. Obviously now it's had all dignity stripped from it. It's called the Pizza Papa John's Trophy. They have Premier League under 21.
Was the Dulux Cup at one stage, wasn't it? And funnily enough, I think Bournemouth's manager that day was a certain Harry's dog is a millionaire.
Yeah.
It's Redknapp.
Redknapp, that's right. He was managing Bournemouth at this point.
And what I want to know is, did we go through as a highest scoring loser because we scored 6 penalties?
I don't know. Unless to score twice and still lose was deemed to be... I mean, there must be a luck of the draw. I mean, there must have been other clubs that scored twice and got beat 3-2 or whatever. I don't know. Beck, is that John Beck, I see, scoring for Bournemouth? Did he play for Bournemouth?
Yes, he did, yep.
112 minutes. Goals by Dean Neal in the 108th minute and an earlier goal, 47 minutes for, I think it was Dean White.
Yes, it was Dean White. Yeah, but you look at that team. George Graham was a manager. We had Paul Sampson in goal.
Yep.
Rhino.
That's Dave right.
Stride, who unfortunately died 2 or 3 years ago.
Yep.
It was a real mixture. Steve Lovell wore the number 4 shirt.
That's right.
Mickey Nutton.
Mickey Nutton is a name from the past.
Carl Cowley, who unfortunately a very young player who didn't quite make it. I think he suffered injury.
Yep.
Alan McCleary.
McCleary, yeah.
The first Paul Robinson to play for Millwall. Another player who I think suffered from injuries.
Yeah.
Good young, highly rated England youth international from memory.
Yep.
Dean Neal. Brother also played for Millwall. Dean Neal had a love-hate relationship with George Graham, I think. Very, very good goal scorer, wasn't he?
He was.
Dean Neal. Oh, so again, his brother John played in this game.
Yeah.
Wore the number 11 shirt. Dave Martin. One of the first many Dave Martins we've had play for us, a bit like Paul Robinson. It's a recurring nightmare, isn't it?
That's right. Kevin Brennan, I see at the game, yeah.
And Dean White, as you said, that wasn't a half bad team, actually. You look at some of those players, and Stride had been at Chelsea, I think. Was he at Chelsea?
It was David Stride, yeah. He was Chelsea player. Well, back when Chelsea weren't the European power that they are now, listeners.
They weren't even a first division power, were they, back then?
Not then, they weren't, no. I mean, our lucky break by progressing as a highest scoring loser actually put us on the Associate Members Cup trial, listeners, and we beat Swindon in the next round in March, 3-1. And then we'd finished the season. I don't think we didn't win it. It must have finished as a three-way group of some sort to finish it. We beat Plymouth away at Home Park, 1-0. This would be in May 1984. The Division Three season finished a couple of days beforehand, with us in ninth position. So it was a mid-table finish. But we then finished with two Associate Members Cup games against Plymouth, 1-0 win. And then we've gone to Bournemouth and got beat 2-1 at Bournemouth. So Bournemouth actually beat us twice in that competition. Dean Neil Skull and then Thompson and O'Driscoll. I think that's Sean O'Driscoll, isn't it? For Bournemouth.
Yeah.
So that was that. But what a strange competition. What a strange way to finish it. And it all had a strong committee feeling about it, the organisation of the Associate Members Cup, didn't it? It was like no one wanted it, yet somehow everyone wanted a bit of it.
Yeah, was it one of those competitions? I can't even remember why they bought it in now. It was...
The idea of it, associate members, is that the reason for that is that back in the old football league system, the top two leagues, Division 1, Division 2, were deemed to be members of the football league. And the third and fourth division were given the status of associate members in the constitution of the league. And that all got broken up when... the Premier League formed, and obviously the idea of members and associate members went out the window. So this was basically a cup.
That is unbelievable knowledge.
Yeah, no, it's the reason that it was the third and fourth division tournament. I think it was intended to give the lower league clubs a Wembley final. I think it was that idea of a payday going to Wembley.
A cash cow.
Yeah, I mean, I haven't got details. It's quite hard to find, details of this particular competition that finished with the games at Bournemouth and Plymouth. But we didn't win it. We had won the precursor to it, which was the Football League trophy for the season before, with that famous win up at Lincoln City. But this seemed to fade away in suitably abject kind of circumstances. There's a quiz question for you, Neil. Who's won the AMS EFL trophy, Papa John's trophy, what Dulux, whatever you want to call it. Who's won it the most?
Oh, fuck.
One for the pub quiz.
Do I even care?
No, you don't care because it's Bristol City. Bristol City have won it three times. The three times winners. Really? They've pulled off the big trophy three times since its arrival 30-plus years ago. So, and finally, we come to Hull City at the end of the
week. If we've got anybody left listening and we haven't bored
them. Oh, they'll be gagging for this one. We've got your choice, Neil, 1979 choice.
Yeah, the 29th of September.
Mill 3, Hull City 2.
Let's settle for that when we play them at the end of the month.
Absolutely. And I've got a Sunday Mirror report here, which, if you'll indulge me, I'll read out, listeners. A thrilling seesaw game against a lively Hull side brought the goal tally in Mills' last three home games to 17. Quote, all we hope is that we keep winning and keep scoring goals and the crowds come back to us, said Mills' assistant manager, Terry Long, standing in for George Petchy. Yesterday's crowd, if that's the right word, is that this is direct from the Sunday Mirror. Yesterday's crowd was 6,001. It was a long, hard battle. It was a hard battle, said Long. Sorry. But what pleases me is we came back from behind twice. Hull taking the lead in the 8th minute for a record signing, Mick Tate.
Yep.
6 minutes later, the Lions were level from a John Lyons free kick. Trevor Phillips put the Humbersiders back in front on 36. Trevor Phillips
on Sky.
Not the Trevor. 2 minutes later, John Jackson, good goalkeeper. John Jackson came to us very late in his career. He saved the whole penalty. But Nicky Chatterton equalised from the penalty spot 4 minutes short of half-time. And then Chatterton again got the winner 8 minutes into the second half from a pass from Mel Blythe. And I've picked out Nicky Chatterton, if you'll indulge me, Neil, because I was surprised he played so many times for us, because I never, ever could get past the fact he'd come from Crystal Palace. And I just could never think of him as a proper Millwall player. And yet he's played 304 appearances, 8 of them scored 67 goals, 1978 to 86. That's a proper Millwall player. But I always, in my mind, had that print of Palace on him.
Yeah, it was... I'm reading from my own book here.
Well, that's the Millwall Who's Who by Neil Fissler and Dave Sullivan.
Yeah, well, not that we like to talk about it and that we haven't mentioned it.
Go to Amazon.
Podcast. But it was actually seen as one of the smartest moves, except for in Foster Hart's eyes. When we lured him from Crystal Palace, seen as one of George Petchy's best signings, along with Tony Towner.
Yeah.
And the late John Lyons, who we mentioned in this game.
I think, George Petchy was flayed alive with abuse and he had a very difficult brief, I think, as a manager. But you're right. I mean, I think in retrospect and with the benefit of all these years of experience, you can see the benefit of players like Nicky Chatterton, who was like an industrious midfielder, really, Neil, I'd describe him as. He wasn't a game changer, but he did the hard graft in midfield, didn't he?
Yeah, and he helped us win promotion in 85.
He did, yeah. And a servant, in a way that I didn't really give him credit for. And it's interesting to...
He missed out on the 83. We were talking about the 83 Football League trophy winning side. He missed that through injury.
Did he? Oh, he wasn't in the side.
Cost us £100,000, which was...
Yeah, big money.
By Millwall. In 78, wouldn't it?
Well, we teetered on the edge of bankruptcy and non-existence many, many times, and that was an era where that was a very real prospect. But I just hadn't appreciated how many games he'd played for us and how many goals he'd scored, 67 goals from 304 appearances of 8 as substitute. So that's a good choice. Millwall 3, Hull City 2 from September 1979. I've picked out one from 1973, and I've only really picked it out, to be honest. There's another win for the Lions, Neil. It's a Hull City nil, Mill 2. And I've only really picked it out because the star man in this win, described by the Sunday People as the game was as a bad game. The stress is that Coventry and Wolves are both clubs' cup opponents next week. We'll not be too worried about what they saw in this game. But anyway, the Lions won it 2-0. But the star man was a player I don't think we've mentioned very often, which is Alan Dawney, one of the mainstays of the defence when I started going in 72. 268 appearances, 68 to 74. One goal. He was never a goal scorer, Alan Dawney. But he was a great, great defender. And he was star man in their assessment. I just thought it would be nice to give Alan Dawney a shout out.
His name caught my attention when we were, I think we were talking about the Middlesbrough game earlier on.
Yeah, he was in that side, yeah.
And Alan Dawney, another underrated player that seems to have been forgotten.
Yeah, I one of his sons is on Twitter, and reveal the mysteries of the private message, the direct message. But I remember saying to him, asked him I saw the name Dawney, and it just, you don't see many Dawneys around. So I wonder whether he was related as his son. But I mean, my description to him of his dad's play was of an elegant defender. And, he was tougher than you might have thought, but he was an elegant defender. He had a bit of finesse about his defending, and I always admired him as a player.
He didn't miss many games. You look when he broke into the side when he really made a breakthrough in 69-70.
Yeah.
until about 75. He probably missed, well, he didn't miss a game for about three seasons. The season before that, I think he missed two or three. He was a very, very consistent player. I liken him.
Yeah.
I liken him to a modern day player. Probably liken him a bit to, I don't know, who could you liken him to who's played for us recently? Jimmy Abdu, very rarely missed a game.
Yeah. I mean, it was a defender, and he was always seemed to be teamed alongside Barry Kitchener. So you had the kind of the size and presence of Kitch alongside Alan Dorney with what always seemed to me as a youngster, a kind of a deft touch in defence. I mean, it may be too much to compare him with Bobby Moore as a defender, in that Bobby Moore won a World Cup and Alan Dorney obviously was a Millwall player. But he had that quality of precision about his tackling, and everything he did seemed to be to be meant. I suppose if you're going to pick, I don't know, if you're going to be critical, he probably didn't go forward and score many goals, just one goal in that 9 year period when he was defending. So maybe, you know, we mentioned Barry Kitchener's headed goal, Neil, in one of the previous games. Well, that wasn't ever Alan Dorney. But as a defender and as a Millwall servant and as a player that you could rarely, rarely say you ever saw make a mistake, I can't think of many better than Alan Dorney.
He fitted perfectly into that system and into that side, didn't he?
Yeah, he did. So, yeah.
He was your workman, wasn't he? And you had your likes of...
Yeah. What they call in baseball, they have clean-up hitters, people that come in and clean somebody else's mess up for them. And he was that kind of player. He didn't make errors. I don't remember seeing him make an error. Let's put it.
It was a Ray Donovan.
Yeah. He comes in, there's a mess, and he leaves the place clean. And that was Alan Dorney. So I just wanted to, as we've done a few times in the course of this show, listen, I just wanted to mention a player that made a big impact on me as a youngster and probably doesn't get mentioned enough. Maybe we'll mention him more often going forward. So 268 appearances for Alan Dorney, one goal. 68-74. And there we are. I think we've reached the end of the November fixtures, Neil.
Yeah, we've rambled our way through them, haven't we, for the last hour? Well,
1 hour and 11. I'm just looking at my clock count here, listeners. I don't think I'll edit any of that out. I do love doing these shows. I hope you enjoy listening to. I know that both Neil and I get kind of therapy from the tangents and the odysseys that we go
for an hour on a Monday afternoon, don't we? And just reminisce about
these wonderful players and the Robert Maxwells and the Eddie Shahs,
Maxwells and
the rest of them,
Graham Souness's of this world, and
absolutely.
Yeah, but it's just not like doing the show, is it? Meet up on the internet and talk for the.
And it's all built on a premise. You listen to it if you like. You don't have to listen to it. You know, you can listen to it if you like. And if you do listen to it and you're looking for a Christmas present, everything that we've done is built on the wonderful repository of knowledge that is Mill Who's Who by Neil Fissler and Dave Sullivan. Available via victorpublishing.co.uk. It costs about £20. And it should slip into the stocking of the Mill supporter in your life. So November the 1st as we're recording this, Neil. So that's a great, great present for Christmas, I feel.
Yeah, out on my birthday, which is on Saturday week, from Victor.
Yep.
If you really want it now, you'll go and pay Bezos a visit. He'll have one delivered to you.
There we are. Support his next space fight. Fantastic stuff, Neil. Really appreciate your time, mate, this afternoon.
Thank you, mate.
That was good. I enjoyed that.
And we'll be back again soon with some more ramblings.
Next month. Till then, dear listeners. From Neil and myself is arrivederci Millwall and bye for now.
Thank you for listening to Aston Millwall. If you enjoyed the show, please head over to Apple Podcasts and leave us a cheeky little review. Arrivederci Millwall. Till next time.
Who do you want to watch?
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck.
On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.